Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone. Practice is underway, so why not another off-season check-in here on Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Phil, how's your off-season going? Still just kind of cruising right along?
Yeah, just, living the dream, having two kids under four and, living my best try-not-to-pull-my-hair-out life.
Yeah, by the way, is that common knowledge among the podcast listeners that now Owen has a companion?
I
don't know if you've mentioned that on the podcast. You've said it on Twitter.
Yeah, it was definitely if you're following me on Twitter, it's well known. But for those on the podcast who are technologically savvy around podcasts but not Twitter, yes, Owen has a partner in crime. My daughter Amelia was born back in June, so I got another one that we got to keep the red out. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, congratulations on that, and also congratulations. You seem to be doing well keeping the red away from Owen, because I saw one of your social media posts recently that Marquette appears to be his favorite squad.
Yes, he was. He's the star of the week, though. You know, I don't know what they're smoking to make him the star of the week, but they have to fill out a poster. And one of the things is my favorite things, and completely the people on the podcast will enjoy this. The wife character, being a Badger fan, was actually the one working with him to fill out this poster. And I was casually somewhere else, probably, you know, paying attention to the baby loosely. And the what are your favorite things to do? And immediately, unprompted, out of nowhere, Owen responds, "Watch Marquette." And the sheer crestfallen look on my wife's face it just brought a smile to my face. So, gosh darn it, that kid may be challenging from time to time, but bless his heart, he's the best.
Nothing says love like you getting enjoyment from your wife's misery. So good for you, Dad. Win there.
Yes,
I'm proud.
Thank you.
As is the rest of Marquette Nation. So good for you. I figure, you know, this little off-season check-in, some things we might do. Now that the Big East schedule's out, maybe take a little glance at that. Not necessarily go game by game, but maybe take some impressions now that we know the complete schedule for Marquette for 2019-2020. And also maybe some recruiting updates, as Marquette has gotten a new commit since our last podcast. But I guess the thing I'll start with, Phil, is on Tuesday, John Fanta, who does a great job with Big East Digital Network, he checked in with Marquette basketball on the first day of practice, had some notes in his interview with Coach Wojo, and among the things that they went over was kind of confirming what many of us had assumed, that Marquette will be running more bigs out there together this season. Probably Jace Johnson and Ed Morrow together at several times, but he also predicted that Brennan Bailey might be your starter at the four. Anything that you took away from some of the notes that John Fanta tweeted out on Tuesday, Phil?
Yeah, I mean, just the general confirmation of the three out, two in. Wojo seems to be embracing that, and it makes sense, right? Like, you want to put your best players on the court, and if two out of your five best players are bigs, well, you got to figure out how to play them together, you know, modern basketball be damned. So I think that makes sense. There was nothing earth-shattering. I think it was interesting that there was a lot of emphasis on playing two bigs, but then the probable starting lineup is, you know, features, you know, kind of more of a four-out, one-in look. So that's kind of interesting. You know, I wonder how long that starting lineup either lasts through the season or lasts, you know, in a given game. Is it an Eric Williams situation where he always got the start, but that was mostly so that Jay Crowder didn't pick up a useless foul in the first 2 minutes, and then Eric never saw the court again. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. What if anything did you take away from it?
I would say this, that granted, there wasn't much there, so I basically would be repeating what you just said, essentially. But I'll just say that while there's a lot of angst over Marquette playing three out, two in, and it's kind of against what pretty much most teams go with in college basketball, I'm not ready to just punt over the season over it. Do I love it? No. But kind of as you said there, Phil, this isn't what Wojo planned for, right? Because he planned to have 2 6'8" guys who could shoot around 40% on the roster this year from three, and they're both gone now. So he's working with what he's got, and he likes his players, but I think you put it well there, Phil, is you're going to put your best guys out there. You're not going to put a guy who is, you know, should be buried on the bench just because he fits the power forward slot if there are 2 or 3 guys on your team better than him who should be on the floor. And I think that's kind of what Wojo's looking at. The best players are going to play, and certainly to no surprise, Kobe McEwen and Marcus Howard, Sakar Anem are slated as starters. We're all just wondering how that 4 spot is going to work throughout the season. Yeah, I think Wojo's going to do the best he can with what he has, and it's probably going to be some troubleshooting in the first few games, which isn't ideal considering those 2 of the first 3 games include Purdue and Wisconsin. So it's not exactly a great time to try out new things, but you got to figure it out at some point. So maybe we'll learn some things in the exhibition against St. Norbert, and then the first game that counts against Loyola Maryland. But it may be a little sloppy in the early going, since Marquette gets it. You can do it 100 times in practice, but I guess you really know until you get the results in an actual game. Because something could look totally great, say, all right, we got it, guys. We've practiced this a ton of times, and we think it's going to work. And then you go out and get blown out by 30 points by Purdue and say, well, all right, that doesn't work. And then you got to troubleshoot and fix it for Wisconsin. So I guess we're not really going to know how much we like it until we really dive into it right there in the middle of November. But I'm willing to roll with it, but I'm not excited about – I can't say I'm thrilled about playing 2 bigs, but it's what we have to get used to because those are our best players.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that's going to be interesting, and I think there's no question, I feel very comfortable predicting, you know, even with the 2 big system, you know, granted there's – if some another team's got a stretch 4, you know, is Morrow or Theo going to be out on the perimeter guarding them? That might be troublesome. But be that as it may, I feel very confident in saying that this roster makeup and the approach that Wojo seems to be taking is Marquette will be a top 30 defense and a top 30 rebounding team. Certainly,
I mean, top 30 defense, that is high.
I feel confident that they can guard all 5 positions and, you know, with Kobe and Marcus being at, you know, Kobe being above average, Marcus at a minimum being average defending the perimeter. You've got Sakar, you've got Ed and Theo, you know, playing shot blockers. You know, Jace might be another shot, you know, 7 foot's probably pretty good for blocking shots. So there's a lot of paint defense there. I think it could be strong. I think it is the potential to be the inverse of the last couple of years where we said, boy, you know, the offense is pretty good if they could just play a little defense. I think the defense will be fine, more than fine with the top 30 prediction out of me. It's going to be a question, can they score buckets?
Yeah, I guess, you know, looking at last year's KenPom numbers, Marquette did finish, for what it's worth, 45th in adjusted defensive efficiency, which is a heck of an improvement, which is why, for the most part, the season went pretty well until that last month.
Right, and one could argue, but I'm not saying it's positive that the Housers aren't on the team, but that was a ranking of 45 with Joey Hauser getting a lot of minutes, who was questionable at best as a defender.
Yeah, and that's fair. It's certainly logical that the team will be better defensively when you're losing the Housers, particularly Joey, and getting more minutes out of Ed Morrow or Jace Johnson, and maybe you see an improvement from Brennan Bailey or Jamal Cain. We'll have to see how they do in extended minutes defensively. They've been okay in spurts and then not so great in other spurts. But it is logical to think this will be a better defensive team. So if they were 45th last year with Joey's struggles defensively, it's not illogical to think that they would be a little higher this year defensively. Now, the question is, how much is the offense going to drop, which was 32nd in the nation in adjusted efficiency, according to KenPom. How far is that number going to drop? Is that going to drop, you know, a little bit, like into the 40s or 50s, or is that going to drop way more? Like, I hope it wouldn't drop closer to 100, because that would be problematic. But when you lose 2 guys who shoot better than 40% from 3, you're going to see some drop-off.
Yeah, it's just interesting that it seems like it's a bifurcation, right? Like, just either Wojo's style or his recruiting success or his recruiting methods have yielded him talent that is either fairly to really good on offense, but not great on defense, or the inverse of pretty good defenders, but not great offensively. Now that all assumes, you know, we're baking in an assumption that the three out, two in is, you know, with the personnel we have, that it won't be successful. I suppose, you know, if we're putting on our really rosy glasses, there's an argument to be made that if it's the right personnel and the right strategy for said personnel, that they could improve on defense and at a minimum hold court or hold serve on their offensive prowess and so really just overall be a better team. But I don't know. I like you said, we got to see it in some games before we come anywhere close to believing it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I'm not going to say I'm sold after, you know, if they run this out there and beat Loyola Maryland by, you know, 25 points.
Right.
I want to see how it goes against Purdue and Wisconsin.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, non-conference will tell us. Well, and the other thing that kind of came out of the Fanta interview of Wojo, they talked about Wojo talked about balance and, you know, Marcus needing to pick his moments, so to speak. You know, I'm paraphrasing or rephrasing, that Marcus couldn't necessarily dominate the ball and that others were going to have to pick up and be successful. I guess I'd ask you, like, I know how I reacted on Twitter. Do you think that's likely? Do you think that's possible? Is that a good approach? Or where are you at with the Marcus pro ball hog, con ball hog? Where do you want to go with this?
Marcus can shoot as much as he wants.
Okay. So you're the other way.
You know, like, I don't want him to be timid. I don't want him to be passive. Granted, there is a point when it becomes selfish, like if he's struggling and just keeps shooting, but I never want him to stop shooting either. If Marcus has a look that he likes, take the shot, man, and we'll just roll with the results as it is. But I don't want to lose games this year because Marcus didn't shoot enough. If we lose some games because Marcus shoots us into a grave, then, well, that's just the way it's going to be. I don't want to walk away with from a game when Marcus Howard only takes, you know, 8 shots.
Right.
I just don't think that's going to help Marquette win games this year.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the fear I have is, you know, if you look at the games where the skid really happened, especially, you know, and it was the combination of Marcus being injured and whatever chemistry issues were going on behind the scenes. But there were definitely a number of times in those games where, especially at the end of the games, where you know, this light kind of went off that, you know, you could tell that Marcus went, F it, I'm going to do it myself. And then, unfortunately, as the season bore out, he couldn't do it himself, either due to injury or just trying to do too much. I'm fearful that habit is now baked in, right? Like, I just haven't seen enough from Marcus where he is clutch in end of game situations or where he is absolutely 100% the guy. There is no question in the flow of the offense and in a game, he can just be a dominant, you know, fill up the stat sheet kind of player. But I don't think he is a kind of, you know, I dominate the ball and I'm going to score every time, kind of put it on my shoulders. I think he's much more of a, if you're feeling it in game, great. Otherwise, he needs to rely on his supporting cast, and I'm not sure, based on the way the end of the season went, that he's got the feel to when to defer and when not to defer.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe one reason why he's not all that high on NBA draft boards. That probably combined with his height and what he may or may not bring on the defensive end of the floor. But yeah, I think that may be fair, but yeah, when the game's on the line, I still want him shooting and looking for his shot, looking to get a shot off. Now, when he doesn't have it, when the other team puts their best defender on him, somebody with some length, then yeah, I'm not sure he knows what to do in those instances. So if that's kind of where you're going,
yeah, to a certain extent, I think when he is the focal point, when basically the other team on, you know, late in games is going, we are going to stop Marcus, I don't know that he has another gear other than, I'm just going to go and try and win the game, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. I just there's
maybe he has had some great overtime performances though.
That's true.
Yeah, so like I'm not going to do the clutch gene thing. I mean, he's definitely closed some games sometimes. So we'll see how he does, and especially with McEwen beside him in the backcourt now, who's also a guy who is going to have a high, very high usage this season. So we'll see how those two gel. It's another one of the mysteries going in. By the way, before we move on to recruiting, did you see the article on The Athletic? It's been a while now. It's been a few weeks, but from Brian Hamilton, they do that state of the program on The Athletic.
Yep.
With they did it with college football the past couple of years. They're doing it with college basketball this year. Just an off-season check-in, where the program is, what the expectations are. I don't know if you saw that article, but the overall summary was obviously, Marcus Howard's a star, but this team basically needs to go a round or two in March for this season to be successful. And that's kind of where I wanted to bounce off you, Phil, is that the only thing about this season that matters to you? Like, whether Marquette gets a 2 seed or a 10 seed, it doesn't matter as long as they win that first game.
No, I don't know that I would say that. Like, as an example, if they win the regular season Big East and they lose in the first round, I'm certainly not going to be happy about it, but I think that shows continued progress, right?
You would think, yeah.
You know, I do give, and I would give any coach this leeway. The March Madness, the NCAA tournament is a bit of a crapshoot, right? Like, it all depends on who you get matched up, and like when Wojo got bounced against South Carolina, what was that, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whenever it was, right?
Yeah, 3 years ago.
3 years ago, they were playing South Carolina in North Carolina, right? So it's essentially a home game, just a bad matchup for Marquette, and they lost. Do I hold that first round loss against them? I mean, you know, maybe a little bit, but like by the same token, I understand it. So I think I will say this. I think one thing of significance has to happen. I think they have to win the Big East regular season or make it to the Sweet 16 for this to be what I would consider a successful season and a step forward. If neither of those things happen, I really would consider it kind of a waste of a season, if you will.
Yeah, it would be a bummer if Marcus Howard never saw the second round of the NCAA tournament, which is what we'd be looking at this season, right?
Right. I mean,
similarly, it's how it was such a bummer that the James McNeil Matthews trio never got to the second weekend, as great as they were.
Right.
It was just such a bummer that they never got to the second weekend. They came close. That game against Stanford and that game against Missouri were both just brutal losses, but it was just a bummer that they never saw the second weekend. And that's kind of – I think that's why there's a certain sense of pressure with this being Marcus Howard's last season, that you're presuming you may be taking a step back after this season. So you would like to have some kind of progress this year. So even if you do take a little step back next year with a lot of youth, that you can say, well, the program is still moving forward. Whereas if they get bounced in the first round again, have an underwhelming regular season, or heaven forbid, miss the tournament, you kind of wonder, it's like, man, are we just stagnating as a program? Like, are we just going to be middle of the road indefinitely? That would be kind of my concern. And it is kind of a weird feeling how we do certainly overrate what happens in the tournament when you evaluate a season, because kind of like as you touched on there, if they win the Big East regular season, let's just, you know, humor ourselves for a minute here. Let's say they won the Big East regular season and earned a 3 seed and lost to a 14. And that would be brutal.
Right.
That would be tough. But that would be a heck of a season to win the Big East and get a 3 seed. Conversely, if they got an 11 seed and upset a 6 and then upset a 3, we'd be dancing in the streets over that, even though they just barely got into the tournament
right,
as an 11 seed. But we would be so thrilled with getting to the Sweet 16, we'd probably forget all about the regular season. That's just kind of, you know, like that was kind of the gist of the Athletic article was this team needs to go another round in the tournament, which is true, But it's just a little weird, and I hesitate to say that is the only way we're going to evaluate this upcoming season is whether they can win one game in a tournament in March, which ultimately that's what you want to do. You want to win six games in that tournament. You want to be national champions. That's the ultimate goal. But yeah, to say no matter what happens in the regular season, you have to go a game in March, it's a little short-sighted where as far as whether I will consider this team a success. But I kind of agree with what you said, Phil. I want significant success in the regular season if Marquette's going to go out again in the first round for me to get over that, right?
Right.
So there has to be something for me to take away from the season to say, that was great.
Yeah. Well, and what's crazy if you think about it, and maybe this is contrary to what I just said, but like if they don't win a game in the tournament, Marquette's leading scorer in program history, which in like 3.01 years, right, out of 4 years,
yeah,
will have never have won an NCAA tournament game.
Yeah, that'd be a bummer.
That's just crazy. So I'm not saying that they have to win a tournament game, but like especially, you know, if they win something like a regular season, right? Like, 'cause weird things happen, and you know, and tournament coaches can be totally different. You know, coaches can be different tournament versus, you know, regular season, whatever. But we gotta have, to your point, we gotta have something significant to hang our hat on that says, look, progress.
Exactly. And that's the goal. But I think if you have an athletic subscription, I think it's a pretty good, if you've missed it, it's a kind of a good summary where the program, I think I mostly agree with just about everything he said. I think some of the evaluations of some of the lesser known players may have come across as harsh, but they weren't necessarily wrong either. I mean, he essentially said guys like Greg Elliott and Jamal Cain and Brendan Bailey are misses in recruiting, which may come across as harsh because we like those guys, but at the same time, they're not stars either.
Right.
Like, no one outside of the Marquette community probably knows who Jamal Cain is or knows who Greg Elliott is.
Right. Yeah, and for different reasons, right? Greg Elliott's had been bit by
the
injury bug. Cain just hasn't developed. But those are the – but I this is where I thought the article could have pressed home a broader point. To your point, it kind of came off of a sense of, you know, these guys aren't good or knocking the players. But I think the point really was to a certain extent, but could have been stronger, is the fact that it's those kind of players that make the difference between an okay team and a great team, right? Like Wojo may be able to bring in, you know, the top 1, 2, 3 players, right? Like there's no doubting he can land very talented players. Marcus, Joey Hauser, Sam Hauser, why am I blanking on the other one and done?
Ellison.
Yeah. Yes. And like, so he can bring in high class talent, right? But can he bring that talent in top to bottom? The reasons he's had to depend on grad transfers like Chartouni, which, you know, is hit or miss with that one didn't work out, obviously, right? Rousey did work out in terms of transfer. But when you're depending on those grad transfers, it's because of misses in recruiting where that freshman, sophomore, juniors that you need to develop into your, while not best players, you need to turn into your solid players.
Yeah, you need role players, right, if you're going to advance in the tournament. You know, congratulations on getting Henry Ellington. He didn't even play in the NIT.
Right, exactly.
And Marcus Howard has never won a tournament game, right? I mean, it's cool to get the stars, but if you never win with the stars, what's the point?
Right.
Like, that was kind of like an issue with Lorenzo Romar, right? He had lottery picks, like, every year, it seemed like, at Washington, but he never won anything.
Right.
Well, so, like, you got to be able to get the role players too and build around those guys and win games.
Right. And like, you know, Sakar, right? He has developed significantly. He is a significant contributor to this team. But,
yep,
you know, is he the exception or the rule, right? Are we seeing other players develop that way? You know, you can't hold Elliott against Wojo because Elliott has been injured a fair amount. He may come out, have a couple of seasons injury free, and really show what his talent and you know, and that's no longer a miss, right? Cain may develop and blossom. Bailey may develop and blossom. And then this conversation goes away. But as the article points out, right now those are unknowns. And if you want to be successful, you can't have a roster of 9 players with 2 or 3 of them being unknown quantities.
Yeah. You need stars, but you definitely need guys who can fill those secondary roles. You need, you know, the guys who are going to get you rebounds, even if it's not a ton of rebounds, guys who are going to play defense, and all those supplemental roles that to help your star truly shine and help you win those big games. So we'll see if the pieces Wojo has assembled for this year are going to complement Marcus Howard and allow this team to get some significant wins. So on the topic of recruiting, ready to move on, Phil?
Absolutely. Let's go ahead. What is the recruit's name?
All right. So since our last podcast, Marquette has gotten a verbal commitment for the class of 2020, and I am not 100% sure that I'm saying his name right. This is my best guess at it. Osasser Ighodaro. He is a 6'9 power forward, 6'9, 190, so he's a skinny guy. But he's ranked 74th overall in 24/7 sports composite rankings. So he is the second commit for Marquette in the class of 2020, along with Justin Lewis, who is similarly ranked. Lewis is ranked 76, so Marquette's got number 74 and number 76 in the 2020 class. Justin Lewis, a little shorter, but a little thicker. I think Justin is about like 6'7, 220. Whereas, you know, again, Osasser is 6'9", 190, maybe a little bit more of a perimeter guy at this point, maybe a more of a long-term project, but he seems to be skilled. I've seen a little bit of his highlights, Phil, just a kind of quick reaction from me. Definitely seems skilled for the high school level, does not strike me as a post player, at least not right away at the college level. He's definitely going to have to put on some weight, so Todd Smith's got his work cut out for him when he gets there, but he definitely has skill. It seems like he's able to drive to the basket pretty well for a kid his size, maybe shoot it a little bit. Thoughts on Oso? It seems to be his nickname. That's the one part of his name I do know how to say is Oso.
I'm 100% going with Oso because there's one thing I'm really good at, and that's being unable to pronounce people's name or speak, you know, in clearly enunciated and well dictated language. I think it's a good commit. I think one of the things between the Justin Lewis commit and the Oso commit, I think this three out, two in thing is a temporary strategy. I don't think this is Wojo saying.
Wojo does not want to just pile up bigs for the next few years. He still wants guys who can stretch the floor and shoot and. Hopefully both of these guys are guys who can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing that's interesting, and this is I'm putting a huge warning flag out there. I am not actually comparing the two from a talent perspective. I am merely comparing the two from a defensive body type. But the thing that stuck out to me was also the talk seemed to be about him guarding – being able to guard 1 through 5, right? Which is kind of one of the very beneficial elements of the Giannis Antetokounmpo skill set is the ability to guard all positions on the floor, right? I'm not comparing them talent-wise. I'm just saying.
I know. It's still just dangerous to use Giannis in any comparison, but please, I know what you're trying to say. Go ahead.
Right, yeah. So all I am saying is the feature – of being able to guard all positions, you know, that defensive switchable, if you will, to harken back to the old Buzz days, I think is an interesting, you know, skill set that he brings to the table. And again, maybe it's part of the reconditioning of the Wojo recruiting strategy where he is looking for pieces that give him both flexibility, both offensive and defensively, right? Like Oso may be an offensive project, but he can certainly earn some minutes on the defensive side with his flexibility, et cetera. So I think it's going to be an interesting recruiting cycle, right? There's a couple of folks still out there. I think between Oso and Justin Lewis and what the roster looks like over the next 2 years, I think that's what it tells us is, hey, we've probably got a four in the making. We've got a stretch four in the making. We've got our next generation three, but we got to go get another point guard. We got to go get another big. So I think it's a good pickup, especially, you know, when you look at both of them in combination. So I think there's some reason to be positive.
Yeah, anytime you haul in a top 100, top 75 recruit, it's good news. Like, I'm never going to turn up my nose at a guy who's ranked in the top 100. It seems to be like that 50 to 80 range is like right in Wojo's wheelhouse when you're talking about national recruiting rankings.
Right.
Those are the guys that Marquette can really zero in on and get. It's the guys that are like a little higher than 50, like guys like up in the 30s that they'll like get excited for and really take their shot at, but maybe not quite get. But I think that 50 to 80 range is where they seem to do pretty well. So currently two guys in the top 100. They still have some work to do, as you alluded to, Phil. They technically have four scholarships left for next year. Tommy Gardner is on scholarship this year as a walk-on, but I think that is a one-year thing, so he will likely not be on scholarship next year. So that would be four scholarships left for the 2020 class. I'm not sure Marquette is going to sign six freshmen. I would guess one of those scholarships would be reserved for a transfer of some type, whether it's a grad transfer or a traditional transfer, because six freshmen seems like a lot, even if they're all talented.
Yeah, I would guess if Rojo's thinking strategically, I'm guessing two out, like, so there's six total recruits coming in theory, right? So we've got two freshmen. I would guess they'd take another two freshmen and then one grad transfer and one maybe potential traditional transfer, right? So I think that's probably the approach, but then it's also going to be subject to a talent that's available, right? Like if...
Yeah, exactly. It depends on who's interested in you, right? Because if six really awesome freshmen want to come here, well, you take them all.
Right.
So on that note, I thought I'd maybe just go down maybe some updates just briefly of who maybe Marquette is still involved with, who Marquette is not involved with. I can definitely say that just after Oso committed, Coleman Hawkins bowed out. It's probably a mutual decision between the coaching staff and Coleman. Coleman actually ended up committing to Illinois. He's a top 200 power forward, so he's out of the mix. Zed Key is also out. He committed to Ohio State. But so let's look at some of the guys who Marquette is still involved with, and one that really jumps out is, this was some news last week, Phil, Dawson Garcia, who is a top 30 guy, and you know Marquette's always going to reach for these guys who are, you know, five-star range. Dawson Garcia is a five-star, depending on where you look. If not a five-star, a very high four-star. He's a guy who's been involved with USA Basketball. He announced the top seven last week of Marquette, North Carolina, Arizona, Memphis, Indiana, Kansas, Minnesota. So some heavy hitters there, but you may think Marquette maybe have too many power forwards. Some like recruiting analysts did not think Marquette would make the cut for Dawson Garcia because of the commitments of Lewis and Oso, but they did make the cut. This is a guy Marquette has been involved with for quite a while. Wojo does pretty well in Minnesota, actually. But this is a guy, even if you think Marquette is already has too many power forwards, you make room for this guy because he is, again, he is a national recruit. You look at the schools that are after him, again, Carolina, Memphis is really hot right now. Arizona, Kansas, make your jokes about Arizona and Kansas if you want, but they're still national recruiting powers. But this is a guy, regardless of your depth chart, you make room for, and I would hope Marquette is still very much in on Dawson Garcia. We'll see if they get another visit from him. He visited last year, but that's when I kind of got my fingers crossed for.
Yeah, well, and to your point, I've never really understood the whole, well, they already got a lot of power forwards. I don't know that he'll want to go there. Like, if you're a highly competitive player and you're a high talent player, like, both the team will make room for you. And why would he be afraid of whatever power forwards we already have on the roster?
Yeah, Dawson Garcia is not afraid of anybody as far as competing time, whether it's a fellow freshman or a senior. Like, he will come in and compete, and he will play.
Right. So I'm not worried about that. Again, that's talent where you make room. If he's available, he's available, and you figure it out after the fact, right? So that's kind of where I look at it, and it may not be a spot of need, but by the same token, we also have six scholarships open. So like, we have plenty of different needs that we can try and address. I mean, I still think point guard is going to be the most critical with Marcus graduating, but you know, we've got Samir Torrance, Dexter Akano. We'll have Kobe McEwen for another year. So it's not something where you have to get someone that can start immediately. Whereas
the thing is, you say it's not a position of need. I'm not sure I agree with that because, like, you look at the team now. You got, you know, John and Jace Johnson and Morrow, but Morrow and Johnson are definitely gone after this year, and you assume Theo will be back next year.
That's true.
But let's say he is. It's just Theo in the front court next year and then his freshman. So there's plenty of room for Dawson Garcia for next year, if you ask me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's absolutely. You can make the lineups work, and there's not a log jam there or anything like that.
It is definitely not too crowded for him. So
right. So I think
we'll see if Marquette anyway. We'll see if they get any closer, see if they get any closer than seven. Again, some heavy hitters in there, but Marquette's been on Garcia for a while, but that's definitely one to keep an eye on that I think Marquette has a good shot with. Now, the biggest reach in recruiting, I think, for Marquette, but like it's a reach, but it's one at least worth talking about, is Jalen Suggs. We've talked about him a few times. He's a five-star combo guard from Minnesota. He's also a three-star quarterback recruit with offers, and I think schools like Iowa and Iowa State and Minnesota are in on him that have at least talked about the idea of playing both sports. I still think he will be a basketball player and only a basketball player when he gets to college, because I think playing basketball and football full-time is really too difficult to do with the college level. But Marquette is still in on him. They're not out. But I would look at Suggs the same way you looked at Quentin Grimes and Nico Mannion the past few years. As long as Marquette's in, you can maybe keep an eye on it and maybe get a little excited, but I would not set your heart on Jalen Suggs. Just, there are a lot of teams in on him. He's a five-star guy. Marquette has never really been mentioned as the favorite with him. That seems to be Gonzaga and maybe Michigan, and I think Memphis has gotten involved recently, so Memphis is interesting. They're a hot name right now. But keep an eye on Suggs, but I would not set your heart on Jalen Suggs, because I just don't feel like Marquette is a favorite for him, despite their best efforts.
So who's dropping bags for Memphis?
Well, I don't know. Probably lots of people.
Lots of bags being dropped. But yeah, no, I think
they are getting some big time guys at Memphis.
Yeah, well, and your point is well founded. I think Suggs is a absolutely let's throw everything, including the kitchen sink, to try and get him, right? Like, and we'll joke around dropping bags, but you know, you gotta go get him. But by the same token, if Marquette does not land him, it's not, I wouldn't say devastating, and it's also not something where we say, oh, you know, all is lost in doom and gloom, right? Like
yeah, it's not that like a failure on the coaching staff.
Correct.
Yeah. So, yeah, keep an eye on it, but don't set your heart on him. Again, treat him as you treated Nico Mannion and Quentin Grimes. A dream if you get him, but still probably a long shot. Interesting thing that popped up just this past week, like I really had never heard of him, honestly, but his name is Kareem Main. He's a top 50 guy. Rivals in ESPN have him actually as a five-star, but he's in Canada. So he's a 6'4 combo guard. As Alan Bukowski pointed out, he's actually at a prep school, and so he would technically be eligible for the NBA draft. So he's going to be old enough, and it would be far enough removed that he could enter the NBA draft, like similar to how Thon Maker did. So I think Marquette sent a coach to check in on him. I don't know if Marquette has even officially offered, but for what it's worth, something to monitor. Five-star guy in Canada, 6'4 guard if he wants to go to college. Marquette is at least exploring that option, but I don't know if they're necessarily close. But at least they're kicking the tires there.
Yep.
Another guy is – sorry, go ahead.
No. Just, you kick the tires.
Yep. All you can do. A.J. Hoggard is a guy that's probably a little more realistic. He's a guy, he's right in that wheelhouse. He's ranked 71st on 24/7 Sports. So we've got 74 and 76 on board, and 71 he was just in for an official visit. Now, he is a point guard. He's a 6'3 point guard. He's also recently visited Michigan State and Ole Miss. He was definitely considered for, if you put any stock in the 24/7 crystal ball, everyone believes he's going to Michigan State, but he did leave his Michigan State official visit without a commitment. So Marquette's in it, not the favorite, but another guy that has recently visited Marquette. I did not see any articles after the fact summarizing how the visit went, but I could summarize how it went, Phil. I could just use the same article you see for every official visit. It was awesome. I met the coaches. We had a great time, had a great conversation. They showed lots of love, toured the campus, really loved the facilities. It was amazing. Felt like a real family vibe there, and I could definitely see myself playing there.
Are you reading the article? Because that's amazing.
That's every official visit recap ever. So that's how it went. So we'll see if any further developments with A.J. Hoggard, if he takes any more visits. But he's a guy Marquette's in pretty good – in good position, but not – pole position. Similar situation with RJ Davis. He's a 5'11 combo guard. He is 66th overall in the 24/7 sports composite. I think he's taking official visit, might even be this week, if not this week, next week. He's going to North Carolina after that, and then Georgetown and Pitt are also in the mix. He recently took an official to Pitt. From what I've read, it sounds like it's Pitt and Marquette for him. You know, I think North Carolina may be prioritizing some other point guards, so that may be why he may not have North Carolina at the top of his list. But this is the guy where Marquette seems to be in pretty good position. So if you're looking for a guard in the class, if I were to pick any of these guards and say, of all these, who is the one most likely to commit to Marquette, I might take RJ Davis, even though Marquette is probably not considered the leader for him, but I think they have the best shot with him among the guys, the high-profile guards that they're being mentioned with. Moving just a couple other names down the list, I saw Desmond Polk. He's a guy from Wisconsin. He's playing for Lalamere, that prep school in Indiana. He has an offer from Marquette. He's a 6'3 combo guard. He's ranked in the 200th on 247 Sports, but he has an offer from Marquette. And the only other guy that I've seen connected with Marquette, there's probably a few others that I've missed, but the other one that's notable is Jamari Sibley. He was at Nicolet High School. I think he is transferred to Oak Hill now, but last check, Marquette was in his top 10. So in the mix, but with recent point guard commit, recent power forward commits, I should say, and the continued pursuit of Darson Garcia, I don't know where that leaves Marquette and Sibley, but last check, he's in their top 10. So that's kind of my rundown of who Marquette, from what I've seen, is involved with, who they have shots with, and there are probably plenty of other names that I've missed that may have official visits or unofficial visits planned. By the way, I'm just touching on really 2020 right now. I'm not going to dive into 2021 or 2022. That's kind of getting down the road a little bit. But that's kind of what we're looking at for this class, which is going to be important, Phil, because they're replacing the all-time leading scorer in school history, and there needs to be some kind of offense coming in next year if Marquette is hoping to build off whatever happens this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big takeaway is, you know, a lot of names, a lot of combo and point guards and some big guys to a certain extent. So I think it just shows that Wojo is looking to have as many pokers in the fire as possible right now, you know, dangling some considerable playing time availability out there. And then we're going to kind of see where it shakes up. I would expect We're going to try and get a couple of commits here in this fall signing period, but I think a fair amount we may be waiting. I don't know what Dawson's timeline, or, you know, Dawson Garcia's timeline is, but maybe a spring signing there.
I would bet you that Dawson Garcia will not sign into the spring. I would advise any kid of his stature to wait until the spring, because he's the type of recruit who could just jump in at a school last minute and say, hey, I want to go there. Like, all right, we'll make a spot for you. Because I think a lot of the schools he's considering have some of the schools he's considering have NCAA issues, Arizona and Kansas specifically. So he probably wants to see what's going to happen there before he signs anything. So I would be very surprised if Dawson Garcia signed in the fall.
Yep, I agree.
Anything else on recruits before you want to move on to the Big East schedule, Phil?
No, I think we've done enough there. I think it'll be shake out more in a month or two. So we'll revisit here not too distant future.
All right, so let's so the Big East schedule is officially out. I'm not necessarily going to go through it game by game right now, but a couple things that jumped out to me, Phil. It starts tough, but I guess you could probably say that every year with the Big East schedule. But first four games in the Big East schedule at Creighton, always a tough place to play no matter what their roster looks like. You get Villanova in your house right after that. Providence is always competitive. always in the mix for the tournament. And then at Seton Hall, which is basically our new blood feud, I believe, our most hated team in the conference. So it's going to be certainly a challenging start, those first four games in January. Anything that really jumped out to you as far as the Big East schedule that really caught your eye?
I think there's a couple of spots with some pretty tight turnarounds. I think that's generally true of the Big East, but you know, a couple of quick games, you know, Xavier, and then two or three days later we're playing DePaul, and you know, playing Butler and Villanova relatively back to back and stuff like that. I kind of really wish that Seton Hall game, that fourth game on the schedule, was home for Seton Hall and not on the road, because that is the new blood feud, and I really would love that first matchup back with them to, and Powell especially, to be in our house. But I think as the schedule goes, I mean, there's some big question marks with some of the Big East teams, but overall it's fairly balanced. I don't see anything too daunting, you know, from a
Yeah, I wouldn't say nothing jumped out standpoint. To me as like blatantly unfair, right? Like something that's just total garbage. I mean, you got to play every team twice. You got to do it on the Big East schedule according to the television network. So, you know, it's fine. You know, speaking of Seton Hall, even though, yeah, I kind of agree, I would have liked to have them at home first, but how crazy is it that Senior Day, Marcus Howard's last game at the Fiserv Forum, is going to be against Seton Hall?
That's going to be, I'll say, passionate, that game.
Yeah, it's a 1:30 tip on a Saturday, so Marquette fans may not be too liquored up when that game starts, but they may not be sober either. That could be a wild atmosphere. Saturday, February 29th, Senior Day against Seton Hall. It'll be the last, not just Howard, it'll be the last home game for Sakar Annam, last home game for Morrow and Jace Johnson as well. So be plenty of emotions as whatever ridiculous scoring record Marquette or Marcus Howard will have set by that point, he's going to put it so far out of reach that it'll be a long time before we talk about somebody who could potentially break it again. But I hope he drops 50.
Yeah.
Maybe 60.
Well, I think the thing that's interesting, you did mention that you know, that's a 1:30 start, but Seton Hall is supposed to be one of the better teams in the Big East as well, being Marcus Howard's, you know, Senior Day. I could see if Seton Hall's in a, you know, in the top 25 and Marquette's in the top 25, I could see that game potentially getting moved later, being a national game. I don't know what the rest of the national
it is
schedule
on Fox
looks like.
So yeah. It's probably staying exactly where it is. It's a 1:30 Central Time game on Fox. So I think that's about as close to prime time as Marquette basketball is getting.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Is a 1:30 game on Fox, so that's pretty good. You know, and one thing I will touch on, not to reignite this fire, but it was kind of a bummer that Marquette did not get another Saturday home game in February. So National Marquette Day, they had to put it on Sunday against Butler on February 9th. I guess they played DePaul on Saturday, but it wasn't nationally televised, so they didn't want to do it on that Saturday. I know a lot of people were upset about that. I think most people have kind of gotten over it, I would hope by now, but I guess I didn't realize how many people, like, seek to travel for National Marquette Day and were that upset about it, but I guess I just have never really traveled for National Marquette Day just for that reason, but I know it's a big deal to people, and I know I'm always at the watch parties on National Marquette Day, because obviously I live in Dallas, we always have one, and that's the watch party where we have the most people by far, so it is fun from that perspective. I'm over it. Some people may not be over it, but granted, I will definitely concede it is not ideal to have National Marquette Day for an 11 a.m. game on a Sunday, but hey, just the way it is, it'll be better next year.
Well, I will say this. There's a couple of things at work, some that are obvious, some that aren't. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm willing to be empathetic to those that were upset by it, but by the same token, if you're traveling in, what's the difference between leaving on a Friday for a Saturday game or coming to a Sunday game and leaving on a Monday, right? Like I don't know, I don't understand where the travel
well,
is that,
I guess in
that
their defense,
significantly
like,
impacted.
If it's for a Saturday game, you would leave after work on Friday. And so you would leave after work on Friday, get in late on Friday, and then go to the Saturday game, Whereas if it's a Sunday game, you don't want to skip a day of work on Monday, I guess it is. Now, I still think with an 11 a.m. game, most people, you know, people who are maybe coming in from driving distance can still get out of Milwaukee at 3 o'clock and get home at a decent hour. It's maybe for those people who have to fly home that it's maybe a little troublesome. I don't think it's as catastrophic as some people made it out to be. I think it's if you want to go to the game, go to the game. If you want to meet up with your friends and you don't like the Sunday game, you could always make it up for senior day. You know, you're just playing that with your friends. I think there are other solutions to it. I think once people think about it for a minute, I think they're going to get over it and it'll all be fine. But if you really want to go to National Marquette Day, I think you can make it work. Again, I concede it is not ideal. I think the perfect thing for a National Marquette Day would be a Saturday, like 5 p.m. tip. Right? Like something like that. Get everybody plenty of time to get in. Party all day Saturday, go to the game late afternoon, and then go party at night on Saturday, and then leave on Sunday. I get that is the ideal schedule for most people. I think I'm confident that Marquette will make this work for those who, you know, get in on Friday, get in on Friday, whatever, you can get up on Saturday. I'm sure there will be things to do on Saturday, maybe a block party or a pep rally or something on Saturday. They haven't announced anything, but I'm sure there will be things like that. Basically have fun with your friends all day on Saturday, get up, go to the game on Sunday, then everyone leaves right after the game. Again, not ideal, but I think it'll make it work, and I think it'll be fine for everybody who makes the time to go up there.
Yeah, the other thing I would say is I can't necessarily report any things yet, but like I do know that Marquette is looking to do a considerable number of things differently this year in terms of what they're doing to put on the National Marquette Day, and I'm sure that had some influence on availability of dates. In terms of kind of events and things they want to do built around National Marquette Day. So, you know, I get the initial consternation, and I'm more than happy to eat crow if afterwards everyone goes, well, none of the stuff around the event was good, and then the Sunday day sucked. Okay, yeah, Marquette should take a black eye on that one. But I guess the one thing I would say is, like, let's all just stand by and see what comes out over the next 3 or 4 months here in terms of what National Marquette Day is actually going to be. And see if that doesn't make a difference. I mean, the day, what day it's on may not ultimately matter if it ends up allowing Marquette to do some new, cooler, different things than they have in other National Marquette Days. So I would just say stand by.
Marquette has some creative people working in promotions and advertising and all that. I'm confident that they will make it fun. It'll be good. For those who are willing to make the trip, I am confident that those who organize such things at Marquette will make it worth your while.
Absolutely.
Should we wrap this thing up, Phil? You got anything else?
No, I think for one of the last remaining off-season pods, I think we've covered a fair piece here.
Yeah, I think so too. So we always appreciate your feedback. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is MOOOF. 23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast on there. Easy for me to say. And you can leave your comments there on cracksidewalks.com. Be sure to go to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Podcasts are posted there as well. I guess the next time we're going to check in, maybe a little closer to the Marquette Madness event, maybe around there, maybe shortly after, maybe. I don't know if we'll have any more recruiting news at that time, but maybe we'll have another look at the team. And I think that'll be about the time. It'll be time to go through the schedule and maybe make our predictions for the season. Sound good, Phil?
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah. One note, they just announced that T-Pain will be performing at Marquette Madness this year. So, that's a thing.
That's something. Another reason to go. Should be fun.
Yep. So
is there a practice just for the students this year? Did I see that?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
But that's the whole, Marquette's kind of homecoming weekend, that sort of thing. So It'll be interesting to see what comes out of there. And yeah, like you said, you know, that's coming up, not this weekend, but the following weekend. And then sometime probably mid-October, we talk about that and schedule. And before you know it, the season will be here.
All right. So we will check in with you again sometime in mid-October. Appreciate you listening. Until then, seashells and balloons.